Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. And today's episode, I've got an absolutely wonderful chat for you today. I sit down with Matt Goss, and what a wonderful human being he is, and you're in for such a treat. It's a lovely conversation. Matt's so open and honest, and it's wonderful to hear. Before we get on with that chat, a few thank yous. So thank you to Shane for helping facilitate this interview. Thank you to Scroobius Pip and everyone at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thank you to 76 for producing this podcast. And also thanks to you lot for continuing to support this podcast, and as you have been now for well over 2 years. So I can't thank you enough for that. Once you get to the end of today's episode with Matt, and certainly if this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, then once you finish today's chat, go and explore the back catalogue, because you can hear me talking to such a wide range of amazing artists, whether they be musicians, producers, DJs, comedians, actors, you know, artists as diverse as Fatboy Slim to Tommy Lee through to the Foo Fighters, incredible actors like Maxine Peake, Joe Hartley, Amanda Abington, Michael Smiley, Thomas Turgoose, and obviously a huge range of musicians. So Suede, Chuck D of Public Enemy, the list goes on. So go and have a rummage around in the archives and see what you can find. And yeah, like I say, I'm on all the social media platforms. So if you see us on there, give us a like, love, a share, a retweet, and all the stuff that you can do to help spread the word about this this podcast, which is such a joy to do. And that brings me on perfectly to another huge piece of joy that happened, and that was this episode. So please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the wonderful Matt Goss. Sorry, I've interrupted the podcast, but with good reason. Hotel Chocolat are our sponsors. You know that now because I tell you about it every episode. But they've been super kind now, and you may have heard me talking about the products from the Cacao Bar, and there's gins, cream liqueurs, all sorts of wonderful chocolatey goodies. And what they've done is they've set a page up on the website that you can go to, and all you've got to do is, just for you Off the Beaten Track listeners, go over there, answer a question, and you could win the full range delivered to your front door. I mean, that's kind of them. All you have to do is go to this place, hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. That's OTBT as in Off the Beaten Track podcast. hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. Go get your grubby little mitts on some deliciously chocolatey drinks, courtesy of our sponsors, Hotel Chocolat. I'll get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we're recording. Matt Goss, how you doing?
I'm really good. How are you, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. It's nice to hear an accent that sounds very similar to mine. And
I know. Where are you from, by the way?
Essex.
Essex boy. Mm. Well, I left my shine. I've got a bit of a black eye, and I tried to cover it on Good Morning Britain the other day, and I wore some glasses and stuff, and I looked like I had a green face. So So I'm embracing it.
Oh, if anyone can pull off a shiner, mate, you're doing a stellar job there.
Thank you, mate.
Well, Matt, before we get on to the playlist, I just, you know, we're looking at the remainder of this year is going to be a far more connected and positive and exciting place than maybe the first half of this year. And so just looking back over the last 16, 17 months, how have you found, you know, the situation that we've all been sort of thrust upon us? How have you found it both personally and creatively?
I think without question, I think we've all been forced into a place of self-reflection. And I think it's been great at times, and it's also been extremely troubling at times, because you know we crack on with our lives at such a pace that we do not look left and right sometimes at things that possibly are distressing to us or disturbing to us. And doing 4 or 5 shows a week here for 10 years, you know, in America, and it got to a point where I felt like I was abusing my body, my life. I didn't have it was just all about entertainment and making sure people felt, you know, transported. And I really wasn't really addressing some of the things within my own life. And I realized that this issue of mental health and everything became very, very deeply important to me. And it's my French bulldog, Reggie.
There he is.
That's why he's not literally not messed up one interview of ever. He's literally not one. But I felt very connected to the way people were feeling. Then I realized that when I was doing my Instagram lives, that I actually didn't know my fans. You know what I mean? After 30 years, I've been singing to them and I had a sense of who they were. But then we got into, you know, who they were and some of the troubles they were going through. And then people that were not my fans started to come into my space. And that's when I also started my own podcast. And I completely detached myself from music. I had no interest in making music again. I had no interest in singing again. So it was quite an extraordinary thing. Ironically, the connection that I found talking about much deeper issues was the reason that I actually ended up wanting to make a new record and realizing there were indeed people that wanted me to keep going. And because when you're in one place and you're singing in one venue, although it be Caesar's Palace, the famous casino on the planet, it's a very isolated place to be when you're driving home at night. You can't expect people to be excited about what you do every day. And I would, you know, the person that I'd always call would be my mum, you know, and she's up there. So you sometimes desperately need to have a conversation about what you've just done, but you can't enforce that on other people and expect them to care as much as your family would. But a long-winded answer, but I think that really it's been a period of growth. And for some people have elevated and some people have regressed. And I think all of us have cut away some of the fat, you know. I mean, I've definitely let some people, you know, drift off peacefully and just realize that we neither one of us serve each other. And, you know, I've just, you know, with hopefully not too much resistance.
Absolutely. I think so many people have, you know, used this time where the breaks have been, you know, put upon us anyway, to use that time to just reflect and assess things. And, you know, from such an awful situation that we've all been, you know, involved with, hopefully we will all come out of that, you know, with a little bit more of the fat trimmed off, you know, and be happier and more positive people from that. Couldn't agree more with you on what you just said there, Matt. I'm going to start the playlist now, and I always start with the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please.
You know what, you're going to have to help me here because I don't have a list of mine.
That's fine. So you went for The Who, mm-hmm. and Won't Be Fooled Again.
Whenever I hear this intro, I don't think there's ever been a time I've heard this intro where I haven't got goosebumps.
Yeah.
I do think they are one of the greatest rock and roll bands in music history. one of the most authentic bands. I was lucky enough to have a great conversation with Roger Daltrey. He gave me some insight about things that I will never repeat, but it was an incredible conversation, incredible human, just a humble, loving person that just has this kind of Peter Pan kind of rock and roll energy. He's just an incredible person. But I always find that when I meet the people that I love their music, it goes to a whole different kind of stratospheric kind of place where I'm just like, yeah, you know. And when I hear this, it is the personification of rock and roll. When this moment comes on, you want it to go on five times longer than it does.
Yeah, but
what an intro.
So in regards to intros, over the years that you've been producing music, you know, if we go way back and to, you know, to the early years, and it was, I guess we could, you know, and I say this with great respect, like mainstream pop music.
I love pop music. It's a great word for me.
And I think back then the pop song was short, sharp, to the point, you know, hook lines. And then, I mean, you've chose something like The Who there, and that's a very long intro, and it's almost, it's a bit proggy in places with the sort of arpeggio synth before the guitars drop in and things like that. And so, as you know, over the years, you know, that have followed, you know, the early music, we've seen the way that people also listen to music change dramatically. So, you know, from the days of buying CDs and vinyl and cassettes and stuff through to streaming services. And what I see now, and if I look at the way that my children get their music, they've got very fast thumbs that just seem to have very short, it feels like the attention spans are getting slightly shorter. And so with that in mind, it's a long-winded question this, Matt, but I just want to ask you if the way that people are listening to music and streaming, and we're looking at music now, seems that so many songs now right here on the radio start with a chorus now, and it's, you know, they're quite short songs. Do any of these kind of movements and trends in music find their way into your songwriting process, or are you still very much a traditional style songwriter of I write what feels right when it feels right? Do you get where I'm going with that question, Matt?
Yeah,
sorry.
It's not a long-winded question. It's every syllable is necessary, because it's everything you said is true. And the truth is, back then you were not writing music with the law that it has to be. There's a kind of understanding that it has to be somewhere around 320 right now. And so in a way, people that aren't songwriters don't understand, you have to condense a story into 3 minutes and 20 seconds is an art form. And you have to really, really, to try and tell a story and create an emotion in that short amount of time is very difficult. But back then, that wasn't the case. I mean, you would hear songs that were much longer with much longer intros, and now people are like, you got to get to the chorus within 1 minute.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, it's quite horrific in some ways, because let's be honest, you don't, you know, the freedom that a painter has is limitless. I mean, you would never say you've got to use fuchsia when a painter wants to use, you know, salmon. You know, it's a small difference to some, maybe, but to a painter's eye, it's life or death. And I think that I think it's important to talk about what you're saying, because the attention span has got extremely short. The way that music's delivered is different. Physical product, there was a sense of occasion with music. When you went and bought a CD, or I'll go back to a cassette, or when you bought vinyl, and then the CD, there was this sense of occasion that you were going to buy a physical product, and you were going to own it, and you were going to look after it and read the liner notes of who played on the record, who was part of it, where did you record it, and all these images would come into your mind, and you would create this kind of story about how this record came about. And now it's a digital file. At least now they've started to upgrade the quality of the digital files, which is good news. But again, to answer your last part of your question, does it find its way into my songwriting? Absolutely, it does. this record I've just made, I would only listen to commercial music for 6 months. While I was making this record, 6 to 8 months, I would not listen to any of my influences because they're embedded in me. Stevie Wonder, you know, Donny Hathaway, you know, all these, you know, Duran Duran, all these bands and singers that I grew up listening to, they're embedded in me anyway. But they absolutely did have an effect because I wanted to write a current record.
Yeah,
I didn't want to be out of the loop. And I also want to stand my ground with, you know, radio programmers and people like that, you know, so I can say I know exactly what I'm doing. It isn't rocket science. If you are a musician and you understand what you've got to do, you do have to study and you do have to stay current. And I think it's a healthy thing. Although I don't like certain elements of it, I think it's healthy to go along with it. And in regards to the word pop, you know, the Beatles were pop, the Who were pop, Rolling Stones were pop music back then, you know. So we have to be careful, I believe, how we use the word pop, because we don't quite know what we're listening to sometimes at that time. You and I both know we've heard a pop record 20 years ago that now has become a bit of a classic.
Yeah.
So we've got to be very careful, I think, the way how we receive pop music and just allow it to breathe. If the Beatles were thrown onto the scrap heap because they were screamed at, we would have lost some of the most beautiful music on the planet of our time. So just I like to be very mindful when I listen to music.
Well, I'm going to take you back for track two, Matt, and I'm going to ask you please to tell me the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you. And I can give you a nudge because you did just mention Donny Hathaway.
Yeah, I mean, there's something about this singer that, knowing his personal story, knowing his, you know, just also knowing how much Stevie Wonder loved him, Mr. Donny Hathaway is a singer that to me just moves my heart and my soul. It doesn't matter what the song is. I just feel his true understanding and his authenticity of every note. And I covered this song on an acoustic guitar. And this song is a song for you. And it's the lyric in it as well, the complete self-deprecating lyric that, you know, acknowledges that you've not been good to somebody, and talks about his mortality in the song. And it's just extremely emotional to me. That can go for anything he says, but this song in particular really moves my heart.
If you had to pinpoint what that emotion was, what would it be, Matt?
Truth. Truth. Honesty. People, you know, you talk to mainstream media sometimes and you say things like, if you undress your soul, then so will the audience, and you get this bullshit, you know, like, oh yeah, another analogy or whatever, you know. It's like, it's absolutely true. If you've been on stage, if you don't undress your soul and just speak truthfully to an audience, you will not get the audience that you want.
Yeah.
And I think that you have to dare to, you know, the amount of times I've gone on stage and said, I've had a crap day today, it's going to be a good show.
Yeah.
You know, because if I've had a crap day and I'm in a bad mood sometimes, it's going to be a great show, because it, you know, never waste good agony, you know, like, go out there, but be honest with your audience. They deserve it. And more importantly, they can handle it. They can handle it.
If you've had a, you know, you wake up and you're feeling low, you're having a blue day, do you reach for Duran Duran, or do you reach for something somber? Do you just try and pull yourself out of it, or do you process it and put music on that you know is going to almost soundtrack, you know, feeling a bit blue and kind of just work your way through it by almost sort of giving that emotion, you know, a musical cuddle, for want of a terrible, you know, description?
Well, no, I think that feeling of many people will relate to the feeling. I think most of us just want to feel safe. Most of us just want to feel safe.
Yeah.
And you get to a point in life where you find a certain groove within yourself. And when you get to that place where you can be more emotionally intelligent and speak about emotions, and, you know, even you just said emotional cuddle, like you said it's terrible. I don't think any form of language, as long as it's colourful and it creates an image and there is analogies and similes and metaphors, I'm all for it. Why do we want to dumb down the English language? It's a beautiful language. So I'm all about emotional intelligence and the acknowledgement of what you're feeling when you're feeling it. So a lot of musicians don't listen to music when they're sad, because we want to get away from anything musical, because it makes us think about, I mean, you hear every note and it's almost invasive music sometimes, because you're surrounded by it and you're talking about it and you're on stage and you're creating it. But I would say if I'm feeling sad, if it's about my love life, for example, I don't, it's really hard for me to listen to sad songs, because I hurt to an abyss, you know, I really do. And I love hard and I hurt hard. You know, I came out of a relationship in COVID that, and I really loved this woman, but it just, we couldn't find common ground now, you know, and it was time for me to accept that it was just, you know, we couldn't find common ground. And, but I don't mind the pain that goes with that, because you're meant to hurt. You're meant to, otherwise what's the point?
Yeah, you know? Completely.
And I think music can heal, and I will put on songs in the key of life, or Fulfilling His First Finale, or Inner Visions, a talking book, you know, I will put on Stevie Wonder and he will always lift my spirits. Yeah. Always.
Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor, Egg Fried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this, they have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, EGGSALAD, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. I'm going to ask you for track 3, Matt.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school, please.
Without question, this band, just everything about this band, even now, I just love that they're still together. You know, when you see a band after all these years, certainly when I've been in the industry 3 decades, that they're still playing, it just gives you such a beautiful feeling. But when I was at school and I was wearing Stay Press and I was wearing Waffle cardigans and Fred Perry's and Doc Martens and my loafers, my bowler hats, my trilbies, the legendary specials. I mean, Ghost Town to me, again, incredible piece of music. It's certainly, if you again listen to the lyric and understand where that song came from, and it was meant to be the death of ska, you know, and they're talking about all the clubs are being shut down and there was too much violence around the music, and ironically that song kind of, you know, kicked ska in its ass. It was an amazing moment in music when you could start feeling, you know, that new romantic kind of wave coming in, and which I also love. But ska music to me will be with me for life, you know.
And that's sonically, that record, it's just feels like it's just been beamed down from somewhere. I don't think it sounds like anything else the Specials do, and I love the Specials, but that song, I've got this thing where I think some bands have this one song that is, I'm not necessarily saying better than the rest of their catalogue, but sounds completely different from anything they've ever done. And I'll get on to that, because another one of your picks today is one of those. But I think, like, Ghost Town, it's so eerie, and you know that, once you've heard it a couple of times, you know that that euphoric bit is going to kick, you know, after the second chorus. And it's just glorious. And just seeing, you know, Neville and Linville and the band just going crazy while slap bam in the middle is Terry all deadpan, don't crack a smile. It's just just one of the coolest bands to ever walk this planet. And yeah, absolutely incredible record. Whilst we're back there at school, like, how was that for you? Did you enjoy school?
No, not at all. I hated school. But just because, you know, we moved like 10 times. So we'd have to constantly go into another school and there was never a real sense of nothing was permanent. It was very transient, and it was exhausting, if I'm honest, and a lot of fights, a lot of, you know, stating your territory as you do as kids, and it was almost violent, our schooling. It was just but then I eventually found a drama teacher called Jane Roberts, who is the reason why I think I'm doing what I'm doing. She didn't care about the academic side of my time at school, although I loved Mr. Brooks and biology, and I had a massive crush on Miss Simkovich, who used to wear fishnets and play her accordion, which was extremely out of order, really. I mean, with all our hormones going through the roof, you know, she'd sit on the counter with her legs crossed and her fishnets playing an accordion. I mean,
outrageous.
And Mrs. Funnel, actually, as well. Like, she used to wear fishnets as well. I think that's where my love of fishnets must stem from. I just realised it. I'm epiphany.
Have you got an unhealthy relationship with an accordion as well?
I don't know. Is there such a thing as an unhealthy relationship with an accordion? I think whatever floats your boat, Stu. But I think that I couldn't wait to get out of school. And I had my first band when I was 12. And I was number one in 36 countries simultaneously when I was 18. So, you know, people asked me recently, what did you do during your clubbing days? And I was like, we had a different start, I guess. But me and my brother couldn't wait to get out of school, really.
So there was never any other career path other than, I imagine at the time, pop star.
Well, I was I had a massive love of Vidal Sassoon, and I was obsessed with Vidal Sassoon and the geometric cut and the impact that he had on fashion in the 60s. And I was lucky enough to meet Vidal Sassoon actually at an Elton John event in LA. And we chatted, and I told him, because my mother was a hairdresser. And the sound of scissors, even to this day, I'm getting a haircut today, even though what I've got left. But I'm hanging in there, Stu. And I thought I wanted to be a hairdresser. I wanted to be, but I wanted to you know, wear the three-piece suits and do it right and be part of pop culture. And then, to be honest with you, I had a Saturday job at a hair salon, and I was just washing hair and just, you know, it just wasn't for me.
Yeah.
You know, I romanticized Fidel Sassoon, and that's where I thought I was going to go. Before that, I thought I was going to be a vet, but I'm talking super young. But I was going to be, ironically, I was going to be an actor. My brother went into that field. And then when I sang cabaret, everybody seemed to like my voice, and I didn't even know what that meant.
Yeah.
But it just, then we had our first record deal offered to us when we were 16 by Arista. And the day of that we were meant to sign with Arista was 16. They passed on us. We thought our life was over. We're like, oh, it's done. Anyway, so, you know, a year later, we met Tom Watkins with the Pet Shop Boys. And a year after that, we were, as I said, all over the world, number one. But it was great because we just, sorry to go on, but we were in the restaurant.
That's fascinating, and Matt.
The fella that actually was meant to sign us at Arista was in the same restaurant with us, and we were number one in Britain and all over the world at the time. And we walked up to him to say hello. We were excited to see him. He thought we were coming over to say, I told you. We were just happy to see him. He went, I know. And we went, no, we're just happy to see you. And he was like, you know, but his response was, I know. But it was good. It was one of those moments for a musician that, if I'm honest, was quite a nice moment, you know.
Yeah. Well, for track four, I'm going to ask you to tell me the first record you remember buying from a record shop, please, Matt. And
first record I remember buying from a record shop is, again, I was asked recently, my favorite, also another one of my favorite intros, and I described this as the most beautifully brutal use of a cowbell, and just one of the most badass grooves ever. And this is Low Rider by War.
What a tune that is. Why don't the cowbell get used more? It's every time I hear it in a song, I'm like, why does that not get used more? It's so effective.
It is a tricky instrument. It's a tricky instrument because it's so dominant.
Mm.
And it's so dominant. So you know, I think nowadays an analog instrument sticks out like a sore thumb on a beat because now we're using big samples on... You know, the bottom end on records these days is through the roof. You know, some of the bass, you know, I was in a studio in the record plant recently and I've been recording there for 25 years and they had some clients in there. Every single speaker in the record plant was blown. And I've never, ever experienced that. And, you know, you're looking at thousands, tens of thousands of dollars per unit.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, a cowbell... Very, very dominant, simple instrument. But in this song in particular, I don't think this tune would exist without that instrument. I love it. One of my favourite songs of all time.
Can you remember where you bought it?
I was in Camberwell. I know where I bought it. I was in Camberwell. Yeah. And I was with my Aunt Sally. And I couldn't wait to get that 45, put it on. I still remember those days with such fondness. Camberwell to me is, without question, where I felt the best times of my life.
Yeah. I mean, you've mentioned like the Beatles and bands like that and Stevie. Like, growing up, was it a musical household?
Without question, my God. 37 Crawford Road in Camberwell was a place that you would either hear Frank Sinatra, Mel Torme, Stevie Wonder, Donny Hathaway, Ian Dury, you'd hear Free, Cream. It was just an incredible array of music, but I mean all the time. And everyone was singing, everyone just... It was just full of music. It was just full of like energy, but it was so many different genres.
Was you a confident kid?
I don't know if I was. No, I don't know if I was. I think we were good kids. You know what I mean? We were rascals, me and my brother. We were double trouble. But you know, having a twin, there's this kind of sense of, there is a sense of like, if you mess with me, you're messing with him kind of thing. So sure. we did have that. We were double trouble. I mean, we had that kind of energy about us. We really did. But I think when you ever come from a broken home, you do have that abandonment issue where you're terrified that your mum's going to walk out. And we did have that, you know, we did have that abandonment issue where we worried that was going to crumble, our family was going to crumble. But apart from that, we did have, you know, we were not wealthy on any level. We were pretty poor, I would say, in some ways, but we were rich in love. My granddad was a gunner in the Second World War, and my nana died when she was 50, and my granddad never remarried. But my granddad was a foreman, a builder. Then he became a faith healer. He became a healer. And my granny Ramson was a medium. And so we had a lot of spirituality in our life as well. We're very kind of, it was always encouraged, you know, to look beyond what we know.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
For track five, Matt, I'm going to ask you to tell me a song that soundtracked your time clubbing.
This was where it was a difficult question for me because we didn't really go clubbing. We did do the Buffalo Boys scene at Astoria and stuff like that for a while.
So, and that was, can I ask you about that? Because it's something that I saw someone done a fashion show on that, or like an art exhibition, sorry, on that, about 3 years ago. And my knowledge of it was very limited. Is this, we're talking about Naina Cherry's Buffalo Stance was in response to that. And are we talking about Jane Morgan and that stuff?
Yeah, there was a whole scene like Steve Strange and all these, it's a difficult one to explain, but all I know is like, your bomber jackets, and you had all the patches and the badges, and that's really where the bracelet came out of, in a way, like you know, the denim, the bomber jackets, and the Doc Martens. It was a whole thing, and you really could. It was almost like the bomber jacket was the modern day Vespa.
Yeah,
it was like you just really were mindful what you put on it, but people were just really receptive to just the way that you would make that, you know, I guess also Nick Kamen, you know, as well, like, you know, that whole kind of era was just incredibly exciting musically. And it was go global. It was, you know, the Astoria. It was that was the scene for me. I mean,
and so if I'm the song you've chosen,
but that was not part of that era. That was not part of, to me, that that's, I chose that song specifically because I felt that was one of the, to me, it was just that, that was such an infectious loop. And I want to use that word. That was the, that was when loops were dominant in pop music, and certainly in that kind of club scene at the time, that, you know, acid house and all that stuff were coming in. And that was when people, even the general public, started to understand what a loop was.
Yeah.
But to me, I still think it's one of the greatest uses of a loop, and a record that conjures up such attitude, and it just oozes attitude, this does. And to me, I may be wrong, but to me, it's a very, very British record. And that's why I chose it, because it made me, that song always makes me want to move.
Yeah. I mean, we should point out for listeners, we're talking Fool's Gold by the Roses. And
yeah,
like, what a, I mean, for me as well, I think in 89, it was such an interesting time for music as well. I think, you know, we'd started to see, like, you know, house music happen. We'd started to see hip hop really explode, like, globally at this point. And, you know, you had, like, new waves of hip hop, like De La Soul coming over. It was the second Summer of Love, acid house, soul to soul. There were so many things going on. And then obviously in Manchester, the Hacienda, and you've got the Mondays and the Roses and Primal Scream, and you've got all of these bands that are just cultivating this sound that just seemed to soundtrack that second Summer of Love, which was, you know, a term that the press obviously threw upon it. But for me, as a massive fan of Stone Roses, I love everything they've done, but Fool's Gold doesn't sound like anything else they've done.
Exactly right. And also another thing, what I'm realizing now, a lot of the songs I'm choosing, the bass heavy Love, you know, the bass line on that, you can't wait when that bass line comes in.
Ridiculous.
I mean, it's just glorious, isn't it? It's like, and it stays steady. Like, I think that's the thing as a musician, where because that loop is so rock steady, it's like it's straight ahead, does not unashamedly doesn't change. But that bass line just sits on the back of it, and just, what a tune.
Definitely. Well, I spoke about confidence earlier, and Matt, you've chosen a career in an industry that's probably a bit more competitive than hairdressing. You've chosen one of the most cutthroat businesses, and you've spoken many times about, you know, some of the industry things that might not have been particularly fair on you and your brother as a young man, and you've kept going, and, you know, new records are dropping now. So aside from confidence, would you say you're driven?
I would say, in regards to confidence, I just want to clear that up. I am a very confident man. I'm very comfortable in my own skin. You know, what you see is what you get. I'm fearless in regards to interviews. And if an interview is an interview, then I don't think they're doing their job. If it becomes a conversation, then they are.
Yeah.
And I think that...
Are we having an interview, or are we having a conversation, Matt? I just want to know where I'm standing.
I can do this all day long, mate.
Good stuff.
I can do this all day long, talk about music and listen to music.
Lovely.
We are definitely going to have a beer when I get back.
We've
got to have a beer. Or five, probably, at this point.
Let's do that.
No, it's, you know, I, you're right. You have to have very sharp teeth in this industry, because you're swimming with sharks. But you've got to know when to use that bite. And, you know, I've been through betrayal. I'm still going through betrayal. This month, there's still stuff I'm dealing with. There's still people that come into your life that want to disrupt your space. And it's out of greed, usually, in this industry. But you just have to just stand your ground and know that that this too shall pass. It's just, you know, I've seen so many bands and experiences and just come and go. And it really isn't about hit records. It's about longevity. That is success. No matter what career you're in, music or whatever you do, if you're still doing what you love and you're still in whatever career you're in, that is the definition of success. And I think that should settle people's minds. And I feel I am driven. But I feel that nothing is important to me. Nothing is more important to me than loyalty. Loyalty is freedom. And I have a saying, like, you can be loyal in front of me, and I'm grateful for that. But having my back behind my back and me finding out that you had my back, that is more important to me than any hit record, my bank statement, anything. To have people in your life that we can, that you dread saying goodbye to one day. And having, I have a little tribe, you know, and we just love each other and we look out for each other. So for me, that's the number one thing. I am driven and I do want to prevail. The documentary that we did after Screaming Stops, it was a cultural moment. It would change the way the documentaries we made. I think that it was so honest and brutally honest that I don't think people will approach a music documentary in the same way. I think I'm proud of that. I don't want to be, you know, terrified of saying what we've done. And I want to do, with what I'm doing now with this new record, I don't want to make a pop record that's good. I want to make a pop record that blows people's minds. And I know I've done that. And I wouldn't want to be doing a promo circuit if I wasn't able to say that with absolute complete confidence. So yeah, I am driven and pridefully so, but not to the point where I'm oblivious to people's feelings or what's important, like a good conversation with your mate and knowing that they know you're there for them. And also knowing you've got that in return.
Absolutely. I'm going to take you home for the next track, Matt. And I'm going to ask you for a favorite song from an artist from your home country. You went to Liverpool for this one.
I know, it's Strawberry Fields, right?
You went Eleanor Rigby.
Ellen Rigby, okay. You know, it was a tough one for me because to not include the Beatles in my life would be absurd. You know, there's right now, all I'm listening to is the Beatles right now. Like when I get in my car, I'm a big car guy. I love getting in to my little vacuum and putting on my music. And all I'm listening to right now is the Beatles. And there are so many songs from the Beatles that you could choose, and everyone says, oh, you know, Strawberry Fields, but I mean, even that song, I mean, it just makes me so happy. And I think about, as a musician, the choices that were made and the effect that that record had
hello.
Sorry, cool game in. And think about the effect that that record had on massive bands like the Beach Boys and you know, musicians scrapped their album because of that album.
Yeah.
But when I hear Eleanor Rigby and I listen to the lyric and I listen to what George Martin did to the strings, I don't know if anyone's listened to the string only version of this song. I would highly recommend that you immediately download the string only version of Eleanor Rigby, because it just shows you, he really was the fifth Beatle. It's miraculous, the use of counter melody.
Yeah.
The use of counter melody, it's almost inappropriate. It's two songs that just magically bond together. And I it just makes me feel so much. This song makes me feel so much lyrically, melodically, musically. I think it's one of the greatest songs of all time.
I couldn't agree more with you. And I've got very limited memories of studying music at school, but we had to study that record and we had to pull that apart. And I think that's the first time I read lyrics and something actually kind of went in. It wasn't just listening to the song and not really taking it in. But I remember reading that and just thinking, oh, there's a story here. Oh my God, it's heartbreaking. And like you say, the string arrangement on Eleanor Rigby is, oh, it's just different level. And I talk about the Beatles, you know, quite regularly on here, because like any artist you speak to, they're going to have to at some point reference the Beatles because they're the Beatles. And it's when you look at when they started their career and when the Beatles split up, it's quite a short period of time. And then when you look at what happened within them years, how everything was a reinvention. Every album, just a giant step. It was just incredible. Like, and yeah, I just think it's, you know, it doesn't need for me to say that they're one of the greatest bands ever. It's a fact, isn't it? But yeah, just the fact that what they've done in such a short space of time is a thing that constantly amazes me.
Yeah, and I think, again, just when you listen to this record, you can literally left brain, right brain, you can listen to the song and listen to the string arrangement just as a musician, and the understanding of counter melodies and along with a very, very distinct pop melody. It's just incredible how they managed to get these two to fuse together and make absolute sense. It's impossible. It's a movement. You find your body moving with the strings. You find your body moving with the melody of this song. So, yeah, I mean, true love for this song.
Matt, for the last record, you get to play Tastemaker, and I'm going to ask you to tell me a song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear. Can you remember what you sent over for this one?
I believe it's Bloodstream by Stateless.
Mm. Thank you for that, by the way, because I've never heard that before.
Oh, do you like it?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's painfully beautiful. And I think that the reason I love this song is because it rips me to shreds, literally, as simple as this song is in many ways. It rips me to shreds because, you know, you've gotten into my bloodstream. And that one line is the only way you should love. And when you do make love to someone and you know there is an exchange there of gargantuan proportion, there's an exchange spiritually, biologically, emotionally. And those are sometimes the things that you have to leave behind. And this song just rips me to shreds. I think it's beautiful. I love that it's electronica as well as acoustic. And I just think it's a song that not a lot of people have heard. But once you have this song in your collection, it's one of those songs that you'll go to and you'll hurt yourself in a good way.
Absolutely. You know,
it hurts you. It touches your heart. But it also reflects when you are in love. When you are in love, this song speaks to me on that level too. It's a very beautiful, and there's a saying, you know, a good musician knows when to play and a great musician knows when not to. And I think this is a really graceful piece of music and a beautiful, beautiful lyric and a beautiful melody.
Matt, we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany this podcast so people can go and listen to all of the records that you've chosen today. And as, you know, we're getting into the second half of this year, and it's going to hopefully be a way more joyous and connected 6 months. With that in mind, I'm going to ask you, Matt, like, what are you looking forward to from the rest of this year personally, and what's going to be happening professionally?
Can I just address something you just said? I hope it is going to be a joyous year.
Yeah.
But my suggestion would be to have a joyous year. Be joyous. And if your neighbor's got a nice motor, knock on his door and say, I just want to say, love your new car.
Yeah.
And lift people up and wish the best for people and expect the same back. It's a much better way to live. And if we've learned one thing out of this, is that we need each other.
Yeah.
And we miss each other. And the people that show you love you and I can change somebody's day right now. And I always say, call your strongest friend. Call your strongest friend, because they're the people that usually need a phone call, because they're the people that people assume that they're okay.
Yeah.
Make a phone call, make amends with people. If you've got a beef with someone, get rid of it. But professionally, I've never been more excited about a record. I've put my heart and soul into this. I have studied this, you know, sorry. Another phone call came in.
That's your strongest mate ringing you, mate.
It is. This is one of those moments in my life where I'm really proud that I'm still current. I know that I'm current. I know the record's current. I know I've worked with the best people in the industry, from Babyface to Sterling Sound to Jacob Bunton and Jay Rustin, all these incredible, and Day by Day, you know, you know, I'm so, so proud of this record, and I'm looking forward to come home and do some VIP stuff that we're doing just solely caters to the fans. It's coming out on vinyl. We're recording 11 videos for this album so that you can actually sit back and watch the album, not just listen to it. I'm going to LA on the 8th to do the next single. We've got a 5-single release, and if it goes well, we're going to do it all 11. And it's I'm just happy to be in the game, my friend. I'm happy to be having conversations like this and talk about music. I'm happy to be talking to people that have, you know, are comfortable in their own space. And I just, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, finding more happiness, more, you know, a couple of new mates and sharing the stage again, and really keeping it simple, not sweating the small stuff, and also always trying to say, I always want to be somebody that will say the word sorry first.
Matt, it's been such a pleasure talking records with you. Incredible choices, and yeah, it's just been a really lovely hour chatting to you, mate. So thank you so much.
You're a legend, mate, and I really love your vibe, mate. And you know, thank you for what you do and lifting people's spirits, because I know how hard it is to create content and week after week, and it can be extremely tiring. And anyone listening to your podcast, you know, just take a second to acknowledge, you know, the volume of work it takes for you to do what you do. So thank you, mate.
Oh, mate, absolute legend. Matt, thank you so much.
Well, much love, bruv.
Matt Goss, ladies and gentlemen. We carried on chatting afterwards, which is always a lovely sign. You know, I love it when you have them chats where quite quickly there's a lovely little connection there, and lovely to hear someone that's got a similar accent to me as well. You know, all those years in Vegas haven't done anything to take away that accent, and it's always lovely to hear something that sounds like home. Yeah, wow. I mean, you know, what do I say? Obviously, I'm 48 years of age. I grew up, you know, in the absolute thick of the hysteria that was Bross. And, you know, I read Matt's book a long, 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 long time ago. And it was a really interesting read and documents, you know, how cutthroat the music industry can be. And as mentioned in that conversation, just brilliant to see that, you know, just still strong as ever, as creative as ever, and yeah, and content's there, brand new music, and fundamentally at the end of the day, just a really kind human being that was gracious with his time, and yeah, and I hope you enjoyed that natter as much as I did. It was an absolute joy. Okay. I'm back next time. In the meantime, go check out the back catalogue if you haven't. Go and have a look and see what else you can find in there to listen to, because there's over 300 chats with so many amazing creative talents. So go get stuck in. And I'm back next time. Yeah, fanboying still. God, wow. Matt Goss, ladies and gentlemen. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Me, Stew with him.